We have with us today members of law enforcement in the community. Starting with, and I've been working very closely, not only with Karen, but also with Carl Jagaris. He's our chief of police for Rapid City Police Department. I don't have full bios on these folks, so I apologize if there's something that I'm missing in the introduction. But again, we are interested in getting started. Von Vargas is also present as a panel speaker. He is the cultural advisory coordinator for the Rapid City Police Department. Are you still at School of Mines, or have you finished? He's going to graduate from School of Mines in 2 weeks. Great. Congratulations. And he's been on the job for about a year. Is that pretty close? Okay. And doing great things to build bridges between our communities. We're very privileged to have Colonel Craig Price, who's the superintendent of the South Dakota Highway Patrol. He's here from Pierre. Colonel, thank you for coming. Also in attendance is the Chief Deputy Sheriff for Pennington County Sheriff's Department, Willie Welchel. I hear good things about him, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for coming. We also invited Harry Martinez, who's the newly appointed or elected, I'm not sure, Chief of the Oglala Sioux Tribe Department of Public Safety. So he was invited. He did indicate he would be here. He might or might not make it based on either his obligations or the weather, but he was invited. And if he shows up, if he does arrive, even late, we're going to ask him to take a seat up here as well. So what I'd like to do at this time is just kind of get started. And the idea is to be able to ask some questions and have these individuals speak about, on behalf of their departments or agencies, what they're doing, and answer some questions. And you can see on the agenda, we will have time for Q&A from the audience. And that will be handled with me walking around with a wireless microphone, so you all will have a chance to be recognized to ask questions. So the topic for the day is race relations and policing. And this has been a difficult year in a lot of respects for our nation, and not only with the politics and the presidential election. But also with a very tough topic in different cities across the country and even here in our locale. I'm sorry the microphone is sounding odd. Sounds like we have some distortion. I'm trying to balance the volume and the distortion, so you guys can let me know how it's going. There obviously is a lot of interest even in our community about the topic, because that's demonstrated by the number of people we have in attendance today. I'm going to start by just posing some questions to these folks, and I'm going to ask the question, but you can feel free to interject anything that you want to, any comment, whether it relates to my question or not, okay? So this is what we're going to do. So, Chief, Jeff, start with you. Why is a focus on race relations important to your agency and current trust-building efforts?
Well, I want to just say good afternoon to everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you to our guests from the state for being here. And the question really goes down to the core issue of effective policing is trust. And so, is the microphone working okay?
You keep going. I'm going to get the volume.
Okay. And we are in a unique place here in the Black Hills of South Dakota. I personally have lived here for a little over 21 years, which is the amount of time that I've been a Rapid City police officer. And I can tell you that there is no doubt that there are historical injustices here that are related to complications in efforts to build trust within relations within our community, and most specifically, relations between government and the Native American community. And that's a broad statement that certainly doesn't apply to everybody, but it is apparent to me in my 20-plus years of service as a peacekeeper for the city of Rapid City that there is divide within our community. Our new officers that report for duty here come here with intentions and energy to serve our community to the highest level. They are enthused to be in the position that they're in. And immediately within the first month that they're on the road, they get exposed to the dark side of race relations in our community. So it is critical that if we want to be effective, if we want to serve the public in a way to reduce crime in our community and primarily to reduce victimization in our community, we have got to have the public trust. And that means everybody. We need to work very hard to continue building stronger bridges where bridges exist and to identify places that bridges are lacking and to really come up with focused efforts to purposefully work to build a stronger community. And so, long answer to your question, but...
That's great. So I'm going to ask you to hand the mic to Colonel Price and answer kind of the same question. Why is the focus on the race relations important to your group? But in particular, Colonel, since you're more of a statewide policing agency, how is your agency or your department affected by race relations in particular as opposed to a local focus by Chief Jaggers?
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity as well, and I really, the invite to be here today and to speak in front of such a wide group of people who are obviously well-respected within the community of Rapid City. When the chief called me and asked if I'd be a part of this, I was humbled and graciously accepted to come out and visit about this really important topic. And the one thing that I noticed, I've been a police officer for almost 20 years, and in that entire 20 years, I've worked for the state of South Dakota. So I've never worked for a local municipality or a county sheriff's office to get that perspective. One thing from the state level that I do notice is that we have a real neat opportunity to work with all of the reservations across the entire state, all 9 of them, just because we have troopers that are stationed in a majority of the large communities across South Dakota, but also in a lot of the small communities. And it's really critical that we serve the citizens as best we can, no matter where they might be. And ultimately, Governor Dugard is my boss, and I know the philosophy that comes out of his office is it doesn't matter whether you're a tribal member, whether you're a non-tribal member. If you're a citizen of South Dakota, it's our job to do the best that we can to provide the best public safety possible so that you can feel comfortable in your communities and do things that help you prosper and help you improve your quality of life. Some of the things that we've had some success with on the Highway Patrol over the last few years is we really try to keep ourselves open and interject ourselves into having distinct and direct conversations with our community partners on the tribes and all across the state to talk about these things, about how we can better respond and help, and how they might be able to better help us in the time that we need some help. Really, the state of South Dakota, any department that's here is too small to handle every crisis on their own. So we really depend on each other as law enforcement officers, whether you work for the state, the city, the county, or the tribal department, or the federal agencies. We really depend on each other to work closely together and help each other out. And our job is to make sure that we're providing you the best public safety service possible. Things that we've had some success with is we've entered into an agreement. We had a past agreement with the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe where troopers were invited for the last 4 years to come to their annual powwow and provide law enforcement services because the BIA agency was short on people to provide a good quality service. And it really gave us a unique opportunity as an agency to learn a lot about that culture that we necessarily don't get when we live in Aberdeen or Pierre. And it gave us a unique perspective to really get in there to provide that service and get to know people and some of the cultural history so we can hopefully better understand some of those things that have taken place in the past and bring things to the table just to gain that understanding and provide the best possible service. So, you know, we're always reaching out. We're always open to working with each other and things that happen out there across South Dakota. And we take great pride in that because when the public needs help, when there's a crisis or when there's an emergency and someone dials 911, citizens don't care who shows up. They don't care the color of your badge or the color of your uniform. They just care that someone's showing up to help them out. And we're glad to be a part of that and look forward to continuing to help provide that service as best we can.
Great. Chief Deputy Wessel, go ahead and answer that.
Again, I'd like to thank everyone for being here today and inviting us. I would like to add Sheriff Tome would have been here today. I'm obviously sitting in for him. He is celebrating his mother's 80th birthday this weekend. And I offered to sit in for him on that, but his mom was not interested, so here I am. But anyways, again, thank you. What I'd like to say to that particular question is we truly feel that trust is the foundation of everything we do. If we do not have the trust of the community, the people that we serve, the people that we work for, that we work alongside, I'm going to tell you none of this is going to work. Because when we talk about community-based policing or working in our communities, we cannot do it all. We need the support of the community. No, we don't need them. We have to have the support of our communities. That's the only way we're going to solve the problems. And if we do not have the trust of the people that we work with and work for, we will not be able to come to the table and problem solve. And obviously, as the chief talked about, we do have a divide. We do have some problems that we definitely need to come to the table and work out and talk about. And I'll just briefly touch on this a little bit. And from my perspective of what the part of the problem is that we need to be able to problem solve is approximately 10% of our population in Pennington County is made up of Native Americans. But in our Pennington County jail, we have over 50% of our population is made up of Native Americans. City County Drug and Alcohol Detox Center, better than 60% of the people we're dealing with is Native Americans. Our Juvenile Services Center, it's better than 60% of the young people in there. That tells us we're not doing a good enough job. Why is that going on? Why is that happening? We need to come together. We got to work together, no matter who we're talking about. We got to all come to the table and we got to work on that because that's just wrong. And why is that happening? But that's going to take all of us, not just all of us in this room, but all of us in our community, our county, everybody that we deal with, along with our, the Native Americans also, have to be part of that conversation and we got to work together. So.
Vaughn, I'm going to have you take a little bit different perspective on that question, okay?
Okay.
And you're the only non-uniformed employee of a law enforcement department here, mm-hmm. and your unique is very special, or your perspective is very special. And when I was promoting this event, we would receive some pretty harsh negative comments from people from the indigenous community, mm-hmm. Comments about white privilege and just some harsh comments. And I can't experience that or understand that because, number one, I'm not from this area, and number two, I'm not from your community. So I'd like you to, in answering this question about how is race relations important to your agency and your efforts, maybe comment a little bit on the perception of the folks who are in the Lakota or indigenous community about what the perception is about racism in law enforcement.
Lampeti Washte, Vani Machiapi, Nahusi Hasapa Hermatahayelo. Good day, everyone. My name is Vaughn Vargas. I'm from the Sihasapa Band of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. Grew up here in Rapid City. My great grandfather was James Holy Eagle Sr. And just want to thank you guys for coming out today, expressing this interest in race relations. And just your genuine interest in this is amazing, absolutely amazing. It's very empowering to me to see you guys here. And you know, it just keeps me committed to what we're doing. Race relations can certainly be a difficult place to be because there's a lot of things that have happened in South Dakota and, you know, historically. So, you know, I can understand some of the statements being said and made on both sides, really. And there's a lot of hurt people out there. And I think with why it's so important on behalf of, like, the police department and government agencies is that we're here to serve our community. And historically, the perception may have been we were not. So really the burden of proof for the community to trust the police department and government agencies is on us. We serve the community. So the burden of proof is on us to trust them. So to be here and to be genuine and sincere about it is absolutely amazing. Coming from the perspective, I guess like I grew up and I was taught not to trust law enforcement. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It's just you're distrustful of the government and you learn about history and you learn about it from the home because they don't teach it in schools. So when you learn about it from the home, it's just coming from your family members and coming from, like, this is how your great-grandparent was treated and this is what happened. And there's so many stories. I mean, you could probably talk to anyone Native American in the room and talk about, had you have a parent or grandparent in boarding school, and they'd probably tell you yes and have a really heartbreaking story to tell you about. So there's some distrust there, and but I understand a lot of that stuff is historic. The culture has changed. So much has changed. Race relations is alive today. Like, we're focusing on it. We're moving forward with it. And I guess I'd like to say, talk about that is, so there's a gentleman in the room named Don Hendrick. He's the assistant chief, and he's such a great guy. And he's assistant chief, and I don't want to give up his age, but he said when he first started the police department, he was about 23. And he's like, very seldomly did you find someone under 30 who was in the police department. You just didn't find police officers that young. It's like today, half of our police, that was like 13 years ago, so do the math. Sorry, Don, sold you out. he said, he's like, now half of our police force is under 30. So we have a young police force, which is really good because they're teachable. You know, they want to learn. They come here and they want to understand, and they're asking why. So race, I mean, if the time for race relations is any time, the time is now.
And could you describe for the audience what your particular role is at the police department?
Absolutely. So I am one of the hats I wear is community advisory coordinator. It was first cultural advisory coordinator, but we had a community member who had a compelling argument saying it needs to be community. Just because when it's culture, it becomes divisive. We come as different people with different agendas. As a community, we come together and work together. And I think that's the mentality it's always been. It's always been a us against them. It's Native American community against the police department, against the sheriff's office. And we need to be one. And I think that's important because, you know, we can't expect the police department or the sheriff's office to come solve our problems. We need to come together and work together to help solve them together. So this community advisory coordinator has 15 people. We have two of them in the room. Thank you so much. And we have just a gamut of people. So we have, like Lord LaCroix here, he's county commissioner. We have Gary Nelson, who's retired, worked in city county drug and alcohol for, I want to say 13 years. I don't think that's, yep, 13. Awesome. And we have just such a wider range of people. So you have these different perspectives who come together, and we talk about problems, we dissect them, we try to find the root of it. One of the greatest people, like, I love, who on the committee, her name is Dr. Kayla Pritchard. She's a sociologist. I think it's great to have her on board and to have her insight, because any of the recommendations we make have consequences, whether they be good or bad. So she can really help dig through it and see what are the consequences that are going to be produced on any recommendation we make. So we talk about policy, policing strategies, and really what can we do to build a better working relationship between the community and the police department.
Okay, great. So we're going to ask the next question to the uniformed staff of the departments. And this question is, how has your agency's efforts toward fostering positive race and positive race relations changed in the time you've been in this profession? Part A. And part B is there a connection at all between what's going on here in South Dakota and what's going on across the nation?
Well, I want to say when I started as a young new police officer in 1995, we were just beginning a transition from traditional policing to community policing. And I think that was a time that we started to get energy to connect very closely one-on-one with our community. In terms of meeting business owners, residents, and getting to know the people that weren't in trouble in your community on a personal basis and the people that were in trouble on a personal basis. So, but I would say that there really wasn't as much of a dedicated effort towards improving race relations from the police perspective at that time. And I believe that we have come a long way. I think it's very interesting that in this room we have some deep-rooted history here. I want to just say with Mr. Walsh, and I don't see where you're sitting, but you know, being part of that that report that was commissioned literally about the time that I was born is how long ago that was. I have a high degree of respect for you for working on the issue so long ago and continuing to keep very close track of what's going on, I'll tell you that when I became chief and started engaging in this more, he's been chirping in my ear to encourage me to continue. And so, you know, bringing us closer to today, I have something that I want to share that's related to this. I have a visual aid here. And that is, this is the Rapid City Police Department's and the Native American community in Rapid City examining policing trends, community opinions, and best practices. This was a research project that was commissioned by our current mayor when he was the chief of police. And really, this was, the final report was in November of 2015, so a year ago. And this report resonated very much so with the same theme and issues of 40 plus years ago. And there's one thing that stands out in this report that is drastically different to me. And I just want to read it. And it's on the last page of this report, which is page 54. So it's a 54-page document. This is on our, this report is linked on our webpage, rapidcitypolice.org. Can download it to your iPhone and your iBook, and you can read it at your leisure. But the last paragraph says, the overall conclusion of this research, considering all the positive and negative findings observed, is that there is fertile ground to overcome historical conflict in Rapid City criminal justice. We are optimistic, based on what we found in this research, that stakeholders in the Rapid City Police Department and the Native American community can work together. They are interested in doing better, and they have the resources and the will necessary to move forward. And I can tell you, I am at the table, and I will remain at the table to address this issue. And I know that my counterparts in law enforcement are with me as well. And so moving on to the national climate and how that's impacting us here in Rapid City. Well, it certainly has caused, for our agency, 2015 was the highest degree of violent activity that we had in our city's history. We had we had 9 homicides in Rapid City last year. That is just unheard of. So far, we're at 1 this year, and that's 1 too many for our small community. In addition to having that number of homicides, we had a record number of aggravated assaults, a record number of pursuits. Pursuits are an indicator to me that the public, and especially the public that's engaging in higher risk activity or criminal activity or drug use, are less likely to comply with law enforcement. It's simply a signal to stop, and they're not stopping for the intervention. And we're seeing that with contacts, you know, face-to-face in the community. People are more aggressive towards us, both verbally and physically. And so I think that's unfortunate. I'm very proud to tell you that as we speak at the Law Enforcement Training Academy in Pierre today, we have 9 recruits graduating, and they will report for duty for their on-the-job training after we give them a few days off from that experience. And they reported for duty on the Monday after the Dallas ambush situation where 5 Dallas police officers were killed. And so that happened on a Thursday night. Monday morning, they reported for duty at 8 a.m. 9 of them showed up. 1 did not. He had called on short notice and removed himself from the profession, I believe directly due to the climate that exists in our community. The 9 recruits that I have, it was kind of challenging for me. It was supposed to be a celebratory day for them, but they reported for duty in fear. And 2 days later, on Wednesday, we swore them in at the Pennington County Courthouse. We had our judge there to swear them in. Their families were present, and that condition of fear was so evident in the moms and dads in the room of our young police officers. I'm very thankful that they have continued through the training program, and they appear to be one of the most cohesive classes that we've ever had. I think that the climate, the silver lining there brought strength. And I think that we're going to see people, I'm hopeful that we're going to see young people that report for duty on their first day in law enforcement throughout our nation coming with a strong degree of conviction to keep their communities safe, which requires close relationships and, of course, trust.
Thanks. I'll first touch upon how the this has evolved over the course of my career and what I've observed from the chair that I've always that I've held as far as being a state police officer. I remember when I started the academy back in 1997, we're always trained to do the job objectively. And that means you do the job without taking in consideration people's race, gender, that type of stuff. Always been taught that from the very beginning. But there wasn't a real big specific focus on what you can do to learn about others and to integrate what you learn into how you do your job. And one thing that I think has changed over the course of time is just the commitment from my agency and the folks that I work for. Governor Dugard has a specific cabinet-level position, which is a Department of Tribal Relations department. We have an agency strategic plan. We have priorities within the Department of Public Safety that I work for. And those are very concrete, specific things that we want to focus on as an agency and as a department in the coming years. And improving tribal relations is one of those goals. And it's one of those specific things that we want to focus on because we're committed to making it better. And I just see that the commitment from our level and from our counterparts that we reach out to and work with, it's like Carl said, it's fertile. People are interested to know. People are interested to learn about us. We're interested to learn about other people and how they do their job. One thing that we implemented just in the last Trooper Recruit Academy class, which we typically have about one class per year, anywhere from 8 to 10 to maybe 15 new recruits, we have a specific block of instruction on tribal relations. And Chief Scott Shields from the Crow Creek Reservation comes into the academy, teaches our new recruits, talks with them about things, gives them some insight about where he comes from and the things that he deals with on a daily basis in his environment. And to conclude that training, we send our new recruits on a field trip out to Crow Creek. And they had an opportunity to experience the reservation, had an opportunity to recognize and realize what a great environment it is and how nice of people that live there. Because a lot of times when you grow up, and if you don't grow up in that environment, it can be somewhat intimidating because you've never been there before. And it's just breaking down those barriers and having those conversations and improving that communication, I think, that will continue to not only build that trust, but improve that working relationship so that we can provide the best service possible to all citizens. I'm just really glad and really proud to be a part of that, and I'm just thirsty for knowledge and improving and learning about that type of information. The second part about the national climate, of course, it's been going on for a few years, and one thing about living in South Dakota is we're in the center of the country and we're typically isolated from things that are happening on the east and west coast. And I think it's important for us as police leaders and community leaders to learn from what's going on across the country so that we can better prepare ourselves at home for when things, or if and when those things, might creep their way into South Dakota or into the center part of the country. And when I go to the meetings on with my counterparts from all across the country, I take as much information as I can from them about things that they're dealing with so that we can come back here and talk about it at our level and hopefully get ahead of the curve and be in front of things that might be eventually make their way here, whether it be crime trends, things that are going on in the communities, whatever the case might be. I think that's really important for us to do that. In 2015, I believe, the president came out with a 21st Century Policing Report, which really took a strong look from a group of people at policing across the country. And in that report, there's a lot of things that I don't think necessarily apply to South Dakota, but I think there's a lot of things in there that do apply to South Dakota. So one thing we've done, and I know the chief out here has done it, and a lot of other departments have done it as well, is have taken a look at that policing report and those recommendations that came from President Obama and said, what of these things could we do to improve ourselves here in South Dakota? And there's a lot of things that we can do. We think we do a pretty good job, but there's always room for improvement. And no matter where that advice, that information, wherever it comes from, I think that we're doing all of ourselves, and that includes police officers, communities that we live in, whatever it might be. I think we're doing ourselves a disservice if we don't look at those pieces of information objectively, look at what might apply to where we live or how we do our job, and then take actions to make some change. And that's a real fun part about being in this position, where I have an opportunity to implement some of those things that we might learn from across the country in those different venues. So thank you.
To answer the question, I would tell you I believe there's been dramatic change in law enforcement. And I've been in this profession now a little over 28 years. I started my law enforcement career as a deputy sheriff in Custer County. I've spent my entire career here in the Black Hills. And when I started in law enforcement in 1988, I would tell you we worked in a bubble. We worked in a vacuum. Community policing, I didn't even know what that meant. What I knew was is I responded to fires. And it was my job to put the fire out and go to the next fire and go to the next. It wasn't my job to ask what started the fire or what the problem was or who was the problem. Find out who the problem was, arrest them, do whatever was needed, and move on to the next situation. I also grew up as a young boy in Custer. That's where I went to grade school and middle school, late 60s into the 70s. My parents owned a business there on Main Street. There was a lot of stuff going on in the 70s in Custer that created the temperament, the things that were going on. A lot of people had a lot of opinions and thoughts and ideas of how things should be or how they shouldn't be. But as a young person growing up in that, I didn't understand any of that. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand being told that the local law enforcement couldn't protect us or our business. I didn't understand that why there was so much anger, why the things that were going on in the community. And them are the questions I asked myself. You know, why can't the police department protect us, and why are they so angry? Because I didn't understand all that. Well, as I've grown up in my law enforcement career, that's where I started my career, there in Custer. And like I said, I don't think we were worried about what the root or what the problem was. But move forward to now, sometime later, I would tell you that definitely law enforcement, I believe, and I'm going to speak to the Black Hills, our area here, do not work in a fishbowl. We operate outside a fishbowl. We operate in our communities. We have become more of a part of our community, not set apart from our community. And that's really what community policing is all about, is, again, doing what we're doing here today, coming together in an organized venue to talk about what's going on and try and figure out how we can fix it and repair it. And we know we have problems. We know that things are going on. We know there's a divide. And some of the stuff is scary stuff. But I do think in my career the last 28 years we've come a long ways of cards face up on the table. You know, we look at what social media has done both positively and negatively. We know there's a lot of information out there. We know there's a lot of misinformation. And if we would have all thought in this room 5 years, 10 years ago, or even longer, that we would be blogging and tweeting and Facebooking and putting all this stuff out there as it's happening, pictures and information, I mean, we'd have probably gotten that business and capitalized on it a long time ago. But it's really changed the dynamics of everything we do, because obviously that can help us, and it can also send us down wrong paths sometimes. And law enforcement, and I speak for the entities that I know that are involved, we're very involved in being part of that whole culture with social media, with our websites, and putting all the information out there, social media, Facebook, and all that kind of stuff, getting the public current information. So they know what's going on. So they're not wondering, what are we really doing, not doing? Now, saying that, I do believe we can do that better, and we need to do that better. But that's really changed the complexity of everything we do. Now to the second part of the question with what's going on nationally. You know, I would tell you I do feel that we have some part of insulation where we are here in South Dakota. We live in a great state, and I truly believe that. I truly believe that law enforcement as a whole, we do have the maturity of the trust of the public because of how we operate not in a fishbowl and operate out in the open. So we're very fortunate. But I would also say with that is we do not take that for granted. That's something we work hard at every day, continuing building that trust with the people we work with and for. So with what's going on nationally, it is scary for us because you always wonder, is it coming? Is it going to get here? And we've had tragedy in this community. We continue in some circles to have tragedy, definitely. And that's scary stuff for our people. But again, so we as administrators in our different agencies, we work very hard with our people, talking about training and the people we hire. We're trying to hire the best possible people we can that can work with everybody on whatever the level is. It should not matter what their job is, where they come from, the color of their skin, any of that stuff. It's very important that we're putting people out there that are working with you that have that type of philosophy, that they will work with everybody. So how we train our folks, how we hire our folks, how that was done in 1988, I can tell you, you got sworn in, they put a badge on your shirt, they threw you a set of car keys, and I was told by the chief deputy at that time, I rode with him for 2 days doing civil service in the county, and he says, "Are you ready?" I said, "Ready? What, I served some papers and went to some rural addresses." And he threw me the set of keys, and he said, "Just use good common sense. You can do that." And I'm like, wow. Yes, eventually, a year later, I went to the academy in Pierre, a small agency. They want to make sure that you're going to work out and everybody likes you, so they're not going to spend no money on you until you, until you're there a year and they make sure you're going to stay. Well, that's how I was trained in 1988. As I can tell you, it's nothing like that today. Our DTO programs and our PTO programs are 13 weeks, 16 weeks that you don't leave the side of an experienced officer, 13 weeks in an academy and peer, and and probations, and constantly evaluating. It's a long, tedious process, the hiring process. I was interviewed by the sheriff. He said, "I think you'll do a good job. You're hired." Well, now we got written tests we take and interview boards and psychological tests that we put our folks through. So again, that all speaks to how we've changed so much over time that we want to make sure that we have the right people. Do we make mistakes? Sure we do. Mistakes are made. We try to learn from them. We try to do better and not make the same mistakes again. So yeah, it is a real thing what's going on nationally, but we're doing everything we can to it not to come here.
Can you tell us some of the projects that the Cultural Advisory Committee is working on?
Absolutely. So the Community Advisory Committee has been operational for about 11 months now. And for the most part, we were really educating ourselves on the challenges we have in the community, how they interact with law enforcement, how they specifically interact with the police department. And that's pretty complicated because there's so many community challenges that interact with different components of the criminal justice system. So it really needs to be a full discussion with so much people, but we had to kind of isolate that to how does it affect the police department. But there's some things that we learn about and we feel like we can do something about, but it may be outside of the objective of the Community Advisory Committee. So that kind of puts us in a pickle, but we'll talk about that later. Some of the challenges we've learned about meth and how it's deep-rooted in tribal communities and how it affects Rapid City as well, and it's just gone rampant. It is really scary on how deep it is in our community. Domestic violence was another one we were learning about, and how can we help and impact that. And we have a representative from WAVI. Her name is Bev Lafferty. She's come help us. So we really took a lot of time to understand these two things, but we also wanted to know how can we help police officers, how can we strengthen that working relationship, what can we do, what is the community saying. One of the recommendations was from the community, and it was police officers need to know the history of South Dakota. They need to know, they need to be educated on it. And we fully agreed with that, but how do we quantify this to ensure it's actually of service to police officers? What can we do to format it so it's something they can use in the field? So there's a program from this gentleman named Dr. Craig Howe, absolutely amazing. He does this Lakota Lands and Identities Tour, and he teaches everything as a point of fact. He's like, this happened. I'm not giving you an opinion on it. I'm not giving you my resentment or anything. This is just, it happened, and let's be aware of it. So you learn about how Native American culture, at one point in time, it was illegal to practice spiritual ceremonies, and you couldn't leave the reservation, and really how the government, it was a design for Native Americans to be isolated and be entirely reliant on the federal government. So the symptoms we have today was by this design, but what can we do to move forward from that? And that's really what Dr. Craig Howe leaves you with, is how do we move forward? What can we do to be of better service to this community? And so with that, it's pretty interesting. So one of the testimonies from our officer had said, you know, I had no idea how everything happened here, and I had no idea. Like, he used the example of the Major Crimes Act and how that happened here, and it was a big problem. Like, it really stemmed here. So the Major Crimes Act, it makes it illegal, or it makes it tribal, excuse me, tribes don't have jurisdiction to prosecute major crimes. And that actually stemmed from here in South Dakota. So you learn about these things, and you know, the officer had said, you know, because I'm aware of this, like, I had no idea a lot of these things happen here. And because I'm aware of it, I'm more empathetic when I'm in the field. And it really helps me. And he's like, I've been a police officer for so many years, and, you know, I'm more empathetic now, and this is, it's been absolutely great. So by the end of November, everyone from the police department will have taken a training from Dr. Craig Howe that it kind of talks about some of these things. We've decided to expand on that, and we're doing another program called Knowing Who You Are. So knowing who you are is kind of used for KC Family Services for adoption families and adoption parents who actually have children who are Native American and of different races. So we wanted to do a pilot with that, thanks to Karen Mortimer, brought the idea to us, and we actually accepted it and moved forward with it. But so we have 10 officers, and that program's quite different. It really, it makes you learn about your own tolerance. It makes you do a moral inventory, a cultural inventory, and look at your bias. And it really, it does push who you are as a person and your identity. And it really, it's the understanding this bias. And it's a really tough program because it challenges you personally. It's not like an educational format. So we have 10 officers doing that, and we're going to see how it goes. We have a partnership with the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, and we're going to see, you know, make a determination if we want to continue it after it's done. But it's a really good program. It's very complicated. I can't give you the full details, but that's why I'm glad we had Dr. Kayla Pritchard, because she could speak more to that component. And she actually, we weren't certain if we could do it because of the cost, but the partnership with the School of Mines allowed us to make it happen. Another initiative we have was the Mutaka Yeyoasan police cruiser. If you guys have seen a car that's kind of, it's been decorated by, or adorned by a local artist. And it was a really good idea. We wanted to honor the local diversity of our city, and that we are of service to all people. And that actually went over huge. I didn't anticipate it to make an impact that it did, but it was amazing. And why I say that is because there's an officer named Marcos Glass. When I first started in last July, he had said, he's like, what can I do to build a better working relationship with the Native community when I'm out on the street? I'm like, well, you can wear a smile. I was like, I've never seen an officer wear a smile and a badge at the same time. It just doesn't happen. It's a stricken face. Like, smile, break the ice. And he's like, well, what about when I wave to a kid in Lakota Homes and he flips me off? This tells me I'm number one. I'm like, you're number one, man. Just take that in and let it sink into you. And so that was, like, what I was hearing last year. So when we had the cruiser, you know, I'm getting emails from officers saying, there's people honking at me, waving at me, saying, hey, nice car. And he's like, that interaction is huge. I actually went on a ride-along with it. And it's a really big icebreaker. I mean, getting pulled over any time from is not a common occurrence for most people. So when you get pulled over, you're really nervous. You don't know what's going on. Are they going to give me a ticket? It's just a really emotional event. So it's been an icebreaker a lot, and I've seen it happen in action. So that made a bigger impact than I anticipated. So that was pretty good. So those are the three recommendations. We do have some initiatives we're going into.
We're running a little short on time, Bon, so that's been very helpful. And what I'd like to do is we're going to move into the question and answer session, okay? And I know that there were some questions I wanted to get to, but what I'm going to ask is if you have a question and you want to direct it to any individual, please do so by name or department. If not, if it's just an open question, I'm going to ask someone here on the stage to take the question and provide somewhat of a brief answer, and the others, instead of providing seat-by-seat response. Just let one answer, and then you can either concur or not or add anything that you want to. I want to get to as many questions as you can, and you can work into your answers anything such as public participation, public involvement, recruiting of minority officers, anything like that. But let's get to the questions now. I'm going to hold the microphone for everybody.
One question. What will your departments, may take all three, what will your departments do if an executive order comes down? Will you follow the Los Angeles police forces? They will not cooperate with the rounding up of non-citizens, or will you have to cooperate with ICE?
Chief?
Who wants to take that?
Well, we do have a ICE office here in Rapid City. It's over off Deadwood Avenue. There are, I believe, a couple, maybe three agents, and the reason why I'm a little foggy on it is, honestly, we don't have a lot of enforcement activity related to that. Typically, they engage at the time after a criminal offense has occurred. If somebody has committed a felony within our jurisdiction, then they intervene at the court level. But, you know, to answer that, I will tell you that we have here in Pennington County, we have a very good collaborative working relationship with our court system. And on a monthly basis, the presiding judge, the lead prosecutor, the lead public defender, the sheriff, the police chief, the highway patrol commander that's responsible for West River is present. And issues like that we work through on consensus. And I will tell you that we have a moral fiber within our agency that is to do the right thing. And so we're going to do the right thing.
Let's get one over here.
State your name first, please. Richie Richards, community member. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you and applaud the efforts in recruitment of Native American officers in all three agencies. One of the regional issues with law enforcement and policing is the North Dakota Access Pipeline situation there. It was very disappointing to hear that Pennington County had sent officers to help in that situation. When we're talking about trust and building relationships, specifically race relations, you know, that's a real deal breaker. So as we take these one step forward, two steps back in regards to dealing with Native Americans and their, you know, their causes or their support of their causes, you know, that poses a real challenge. My question being, aside from that, you know, like I mentioned, the one step forward, two steps back philosophy. My question is, where are we at with recruitment of Native American officers in all three agencies? And what are some of the challenges in bringing Native American officers to any of your agencies?
So let's have each of you from all three agencies provide a brief response to that question.
Reference recruitment. This is something that we work very diligently on. What I would tell you is we do have some Native American folks that do work in the sheriff's office. I would tell you that I would probably use three words here is what we see in recruitment. Perception would be one of them. Access and contacts. That would be the three words I'd use, and I'll just give a brief because I know there's lots of questions, but I think there is a perception out there that by some that we're not out actively recruiting Native Americans. I can tell you that that's not true, that we are. We've had some awesome Native American law enforcement officers that have left our agency and went on and done well in other law enforcement agencies. We got counselors. We got transport officers, correctional officers currently. So talking about access, you know, our recruiting process is pretty lengthy to get hired onto our agency, and we're looking at ways to where we can take it off-site, where we could go, whether it be to the reservations, the colleges, locations. That's where we've tried to reach out. to actively do our testing, our interviewing, the physical part of the testing, all that stuff, and do it on site because it requires several trips back and forth, which I know is hard for folks. And then also having contacts, people that can help us organize that, put that stuff together. We have reached out in the past, and we have not had success with them getting back to us and helping us with some of that. But that is something that we're actively working, and we need to get better and work harder at that also.
Yeah, thank you for the question. One thing that I think with any recruiting, it starts with our young kids. And, you know, some of the narrative that goes on across the country, whether it be accurate or not, really has an impact on our youth, no matter where they live or where they reside. And so I think it's important to get into the schools. I think it's important to display as many times as possible what law enforcement's about and the things that we do. One thing that we've tried to do, and we've done it now for about 5 years, we have a youth trooper academy where kids from all across South Dakota, there's 24 that are selected, that get to come to a highly competitive week in Pierre where they get to learn about what it's like to be a state trooper, but also what it's like to be a police officer in South Dakota. And just this last class, we had one young man from Cheyenne River that was a part of that group. And of the 24 selected, there was over 100 kids that had applied to be a part of that. So I think engaging and reaching out to those kids is very important, and to probably educate them on things that we do in law enforcement so that they're hearing that narrative from us and not from, you know, other sources that may or may not be entirely accurate. As far as recruiting folks to be state troopers, we have a handful of troopers at workforce that are enrolled members. In fact, our state trooper of the year in 2015 is an enrolled member on Rosebud. Todd Albertson was our trooper of the year last year, and very proud of him. And we were invited for the first time just last year when we were going through an active recruiting campaign to come down onto Rosebud and to set up and to go to the college and to hand out applications and to visit with kids that were there and to visit with potential applicants so that they could have an opportunity firsthand right there in person to apply to become a state trooper. So I agree with Willie. There's a lot of improvement that can be gained in that. There's a lot of different ways that we are looking forward to continue to reach out and to hopefully, you know, display what our agency is, how we work together, and how everybody just needs to come together and be a good partner. And we're looking for the best quality people. Of course, I'm competing with the chief and the sheriff's office on hiring those good people, but there's enough of them out there in South Dakota, I guarantee you, where we can all find good quality people to come work for us.
I was just going to say I did recently hire a trooper, and he's forgiven me already, so...
Thank you so much for the question, Richie, and got to throw this in there, is that it's really unfair to have just us four up here and talking about race relations, because there's been so much people who are dedicated to this, and like Tim Gallego had urged the governor to focus on race relations with the Year of Reconciliation. We have people here from Community Conversations who are fully dedicated to this and help keep the spirit of race relations alive and well in Rapid City. So there's so much people doing this, and it's absolutely amazing that we're working in unison to make an impact. So when it comes to police recruiting, what I've been seeing is setting up a booth and at a career fair is not bringing people in. So we really need to be strategic on how we recruit. So what I've been doing is a series of focus groups. I'm currently in the process of it, of recruiting three different categories of people. One of them is for Native Americans who want to become police officers. The second category is for friends and family members of aspiring Native American police officers. And the third category is just for the community at large who has an interest in minority representation in law enforcement. And I'm learning a lot of really interesting things. I'm learning what's keeping people away. I'm learning, seeing trends on why people aren't coming to it and what we can do to improve that. How can we engage with their friends and family members more? Just to be honest, you know, being Native American and being in law enforcement is really challenging because of historic injustices. When I took this position before, I was this really stellar Native American student doing amazing things, a good representative of the community. The day I take the job with the police department, I'm a token Indian and a puppet for the mayor. You know, and that's just the truth of it. And these are what people are saying. This is their perception. And I understand why doing something like this doesn't seem genuine after years of, you know, this, the history of South Dakota. So But some of these trends are absolutely amazing, and I think this plan I have, or is designing, that the Community Advisory Committee is designing and working with other people too, is going to be a big year for recruiting Native Americans into law enforcement. It's going to be very strategic. It's not going to be a benefit just to the police department. They're going to see that with the sheriff's office. They're going to see it with the highway patrol. They're going to see candidates being produced from this. So I'm really excited, but I'm sorry, you guys have to wait. So I can't give you too much on it because it's still a work in progress.
If I could jump in, I would like to start addressing the second portion or the first portion of the question regarding the, as Richie put it, you know, one step forward, two steps backward situation. And first off, let me just say that we have a lot of work that needs to be done. It's delicate work. There are going to be times where there's misunderstandings. Feelings could get hurt, but as leaders and community leaders, we have a responsibility to continue on that path to move forward. Being responsible for the safety of 122 sworn officers, 150-some total staff members, is a very, very large responsibility. I personally have received the phone call that three of our officers were shot. One, thankfully, is still here with us today. I haven't been able to talk about that for the last 5 years, and I'm finally to a point that I can speak about that. And I will tell you that I happened to be, by chance, with Colonel Price on the day that Trooper Bader was horribly assaulted here in Pennington County. And the initial call was that he was shot. And I saw the change in demeanor immediately and felt it right with him. Brought me back. And, you know, when we got the final report that he hadn't been shot, it really didn't matter. It was just as bad as being shot. It really was. And thankfully, you know, he's on his road to recovery. So that's a great responsibility that we have here in a generally rural state. And 122 sworn officers is not enough to keep all of you safe under all circumstances in our community. Our officers are exposed to risk. They are exposed to injury and assault. And so to cooperate and collaborate with other law enforcement agencies is absolutely essential in order to provide effective services in terms of public safety and health and, you know, disaster-related safety. We, over the course of my career, have collaborated with Pine Ridge on numerous occasions. We have had some momentum to engage in memorandums of understanding. It's challenging because there is a lot of change that can occur within tribal political environments and such. But you have to have those relationships in place. So, you know, when a call for service comes to another community that we need your help, I will likely be in that position at some point in my career to make that call outward. So we've got to have this collaborative effort, and thankfully we have it here, which is a force multiplier, which is a huge security blanket for all of us. And the unfortunate reality, and why I told you about, you know, our officer exposure to injury and other things, is that there are people right here in our community that seek to do harm to us. That is their objective. Now, I recognize, without taking any political stance on the issue, because there's an issue that all of the anger and emotion, et cetera, is related to in North Dakota, but to, without taking a position on that, I can tell you that there are a few people, and it might just be a few, maybe one or two or three, that would like to see harm done to law enforcement officers, would like to see anarchy occur in our region, and would like to see North Dakota law enforcement ran over by a Mack truck. There are people that would celebrate that. It's very few, but they're there. And it is our job to ensure if that type of large-scale behavior comes into our community rapidly, that we are prepared to deal with it. With number one, we can't keep you safe if we can't keep our officers safe. And so after what I've been through, I am going to prioritize officer safety. And the number one way to do so is to gain compliance by a show of force. What we're looking for is compliance, not a conflict. And I have a high degree of respect for the Constitution and for those that have a passion for exercising their rights on particular issues. But it's got to be peaceful and lawful. And the definition of peaceful and lawful right now is blurred. And for the law enforcement officer, the young man or woman that has reported for duty and has had this joyful career for just a few years, they can't tell the difference of who is going to harm them and who is going to be peaceful. And so they have to take precautions, and precautions in numbers is a critical starting point. And that's...
Hi, I'm Marnie Herman, and I'm a co-spokesperson for Minnelusahano Kilikichiapi Ambassadors. So thank you, everybody, for being here today. My question is on a little bit lighter on topic than yours, Chief, just now. But can you address how you all, in your various agencies, deal with communication in an instant communication world, the power of social media in particular, traditional media also, to get... Often, well, I shouldn't say often, sometimes incorrect information to make some sort of point or to create some sort of reaction that is just really overall damaging to the work that most of us here think should be done. But if can you address how you combat that or head it off? Chief, or to anybody who wants to go.
I'll be very brief, and then I'll offer the microphone. We have got to rapidly be as transparent as possible. We are on a 24/7 news cycle now, where we used to be on an 8 to 12 hour news cycle. So we have to empower our staff to put out appropriate information, but we also have to be very careful that we don't put out misinformation. You know, we deal with very, very high level situations in our community where people have been shot or killed or arrested. And if we put out the wrong name or circumstance, it can be devastating long term. So we are very, very focused on working diligently to expedite information, but at the same time, make sure it's accurate.
I don't really have anything to add to that other than, you know, as the chief said, we're just trying to stay on top of it with our supervisors and allowing them, you know, empowering them to get the information, make sure we got the right people on scene to get the best information we can, and, again, to correct any misinformation that's out there.
And one of you gave statistics when we began, citing the disproportionate numbers of Native American people who are incarcerated for various offenses and who are arrested. And you said that shows we have a lot to do. And I can't remember who gave those statistics.
I did.
So my question would be for you. I just recently read The New Jim Crow. And the premise of that author is that in the war on drugs, the African-American community was targeted by law enforcement at a much greater intensity than the non-African-American, than the white community. My question would be, in terms of those statistics, could it be that some of that focus is directed more at the Native American community? Therefore, the apprehension and incarceration rates are greater than on the white community. And is the work that needs to be done that law enforcement needs to be looking and trying to get and apprehend more of the white offenders?
I would, excellent question. Thank you for bringing that. I would tell you that when we're talking about drug arrests and some of this population, a lot of what we're dealing with these numbers are chronic offenders that are not necessarily, are we talking drugs in that type of stuff, but some of our folks that we're dealing with, some of our folks that are homeless, some of our folks that are in our facilities, whether it's drug or alcohol addiction type stuff that we're dealing with. But I would tell you from our task force that are working in our community and in the Black Hills, I would tell you, no, we're not targeting Native Americans. We're targeting anybody that is bringing illegal drugs into our community, into our area, and whether it's on our interstates, whether it's those that are distributing it here. I would tell you we have a broad range of folks that are involved in that type of activity. Now, in the last few years, we've worked very diligently on, you know, we've seen a huge increase in meth arrests. Heroin has made a resurgence back in our community that we're dealing with. So I would tell you, no, I don't believe we're targeting that, but we are targeting everybody in the drug world.
I just want to say that the correlation of illegal drug use has a direct connection in most cases to violent crime. And like I said, our statistics last year, we were in a bad place. This year, Pine Ridge has had a high number of homicides and other violent acts occurring there. I think that, again, I'm just going to go back to the collaboration, communication, that we need to work together, meaning we as state and local government with tribal government, and that means everybody. That means the county commissioners, city council members, the tribal council members, because we need to improve our communication and sharing information, not only to arrest somebody or bust them, but to get them the intervention that they need. For example, we all know that a 13-year-old, or maybe it was a 14-year-old, I think Richie wrote an article on this, was shot in walking down the road in Pine Ridge recently. Well, I can tell you that we here in Rapid City know who that person is and have active warrants out for him. And that if we would have been working, not we at law enforcement level, but as community to community to identify this person, we may have been able to hold him accountable for his offenses here in Pennington County and got him the appropriate sanction, which would have included rehabilitation and treatment. But now he has shot and killed it could be 14-year-old, I can't remember, in our community, and he is likely going to federal prison, and tragedy for everybody involved. So I hope that's somewhat relevant to your question.
You know, when it comes to substance abuse, I mean, there's dependencies, and that's kind of what I started in. I wanted to become a chemical dependency counselor, and started at Oglala Lakota College, but I realized some of these things are due to poverty, and that's how I switched to industrial engineering, looking at economic development to tribal nations in South Dakota. But I really left the career because I questioned my trainee or my trainer, and I'm like, this individual's been through this program 3 times. She's been through twice. He's been through 4. So we require people to go through these programs over and over again. They say the success rate is 10%, and I couldn't dedicate my life to 10%. And these are tax paid. These are programs that are funded and supported by the state. So I think we need to give a greater amount of flexibility to treatment counselors in these programs to be able to work with their clients to really meet their needs and really to have a reform. We talk about criminal justice reform, but a parallel conversation that needs to be had is treatment reform. What can we do to give our treatment providers better flexibility to meet the needs of their clients? So I thought that was important to add to that statement.